What we've been talking about is ways that we can show that we can believe what the Gospels say about Jesus. And so we're going to finish that up with a lesson talking about people that think they should be able to be free to pick and choose what they believe about Jesus. Because you're going to encounter this as you go out and you talk to people. You'll find people that like certain aspects of Christianity, and so they'll follow those gladly. But there's a lot of other things they don't like about Christianity, so they just forget all those, and they just take the parts they like. And sometimes they mix it in with elements they like from other religions. And they just kind of take a cafeteria approach to spirituality. They want spirituality in their lives. They feel that hole in their lives that's missing without having spirituality. But they just don't like any one particular religion. Sometimes they've shopped around. Sometimes they haven't. But they just haven't found what they're looking for. So what they do is they just design their own religion. And so they will take the elements they like from Buddhism. They may take some ideas about crystals, and they may pull some things that they like from Judaism and from Christianity, and they meld them all together and just kind of create what it is that they want to believe. They'll make some quotes like this. I explored Christianity, but I didn't get any answers that satisfied me. I take what resonates with me from each religion. They say, I don't believe in right or wrong. It just is. If it feels like something I should do, then I'll do it. And I believe everyone's belief system is right for them. Mine is right for me. Yours is right for you. My mom's is right for her, and so on. I don't believe in judging each other the way that I see happening in Christianity and other religions. So you're going to encounter this of people that say, well, I do like parts of Christianity and I do follow some parts of it, but there are some other parts that just aren't right for me. I don't want to take those parts, so I'm just going to leave those out. There was a survey in 2005 by CBS that said that 38% of Americans say the search for spirituality, no matter where it takes them, is more important than sticking to the traditions of their church. And in that same year, a Newsweek poll said that 8 in 10 Americans do not believe any one faith is the sole path to salvation. So that's what you're going to encounter as you get out into the world. So we're going to talk today about how you counter that belief, how you can talk to people that have these sort of beliefs. A lot of people really are turned off by the church, not just the Church of Christ, but Christianity in general. They say it's exclusive, it's condemning, intolerant, and intent on strapping people into a straitjacket of rigid dogma. So they say that the Jesus I believe in isn't like what other people believe in. They'll say that they like their Jesus more than the judgmental Jesus that a lot of people have. And they say, who's to say which Jesus is more real? Because they say nobody can be certain exactly who Jesus was or what he thought, what he taught. So they say, you have your truth and I have mine. And what's important is what works in each individual's life. So what could be wrong with this non-judgmental approach and the willingness to give everybody the faith that they see as a good fit for them? Why shouldn't we be able to just accept the love of Jesus and overlook the teachings about hell? Why can't we just let people follow their hearts and not condemn people that believe differently? And who's to say our opinions are any better than anybody else's? And isn't a person's sincerity more important than whether or not they adhere to every clause of a certain denomination? So what do you think? Have you ever encountered anybody that had these kind of thoughts? How did you respond, and how should you respond? What do you think?
That's right.
Like buying a car. I didn't make a car. It's kind of like a man.
Okay. Signals in there, but yes. People treat that as just a suggestion.
I think people think that that lever is an ejection signal, and that's why they refuse to use it.
Yep, that's true. And I thought where you were going with this was shopping for a car. You know, you go around and you look at different cars, but you've still got to pick from what's there. I mean, there's a rare individual or two that may go to their garage and take some parts and build their own vehicle and custom make it, but most of the time you shop from what's there. Do you have your hand up, Chuck?
And
no.
I'm following your thought process is that some people believe that it's okay for an individual to follow their own course because they're passionate about what they do.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't be wrong. And I just got to think about that. Yeah, they were passionate about telling people.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and hold that thought because I'm going to circle back to that in just a minute.
Yeah.
What a lot of people say is that you can't be certain about things because that leads to oppression. And in a way, you know, there's a grain of truth to that. When you have a group of people that it's certain that they've got the truth and that their belief system explains everything, then you start to to have a thought process of there's people on the inside and there's people on the outside. And that the people that disagree with you are on the outside. And so those in power say, this is the truth, and they oppose the people that disagree. And that is how you end up with places like Auschwitz and gulags and things like that. So, but some people's response to that is, well, everybody's viewpoint is as valid as everybody else's. And so there is nobody that has the truth. You know, this is true for you, and this is true for me. So you know, nobody's opinion is any more valuable or any more valid than anybody else's. So that's the thought process, that you can have your truth and I can have my truth. Okay?
Yeah. One problem with that is if I'm telling them that there's only one truth, okay, and that's the truth we need to be following, they're not going to agree with me and let me have my truth. Mm-hmm. So they've already contradicted themselves.
That's true. And it leads to moral relativism, which means that's wrong for you, but it's not wrong for me. You know, adultery may be wrong for you, but for me it's fine. I don't have a problem with it. So that's the kind of attitude that you end up with. So what's the problem with that line of thinking? There's a big glaring elephant in the room that's wrong with that line of thinking. And that is that there is such a thing as truth. And I'm not just talking about the Bible. I'm talking about there's such a thing as truth. Up until about 300 BC, everybody thought that the world was flat. But that didn't make it flat. So it doesn't matter, even if everybody thinks something, it could still be wrong. So there is such a thing as truth. It doesn't matter if I think the world is flat or if I think that it's round. It still is one or the other. There is still truth out there. You may not believe it. Nobody might believe it. But there's still such a thing as truth that exists. And so, just like Pontius Pilate says, what is truth? People have been asking that question ever since. And the thing is, there is a truth about things.
If you think about the goods of the source, God created, it would be no different than me as the move to a mechanic. It's a problem that I have in my body. A mechanic can't do it. I'm going to go to a mechanic because something spiritually or the limit. Something spiritually in relationship with God is only one truth and one source, and that's God. Mm-hmm. If you try to pull from other like the concept you're talking about,
there is truth. I mean, and back about that time I was talking about, Aristotle looked up at the moon during a lunar eclipse and said, you know, that shadow that's on the moon is curved. You know, that probably means something. And then he observed, you know, as you go south, you start seeing different stars. The sky looks different than it does as you go farther north. And if the world was flat, that wouldn't be the case. Everybody would see the same sky as you looked up. And so that started him to thinking, and starting to say, you know, the only plausible explanation is that the earth is round. And so then you had Eratosthenes, and he actually measured. He took a place where on a particular day the sun was directly overhead, and it would shine all the way down into the bottom of this 300-foot well. So he knew the sun was exactly overhead. So on that same day of the year, he went to a place about 500 miles away and measured the angle that the shadows existed. And he said, yes, they're, it's straight overhead here, but 500 miles away, it's not. So he measured that angle, said it's a 7-degree angle, and since they're 500 miles apart, and that's 7 degrees out of 360 in the whole circle, that must mean that the Earth is 25,000 miles around. And he's almost exactly right. And this was in 325 BC that he figured that out. And all of a sudden, it turned everything on its head. All of a sudden, he had absolute proof that the Earth was round at that point. And everybody realized they had been wrong. And sometimes that's what happens. You realize what I have thought all my life is wrong. And you realize there is truth, and I now know what it is. And, you know, I didn't before. So there is something to be said about being open-minded and realizing that, yes, there is a truth, and I may or may not know what it is, so I'm going to search for it and make sure that I do.
Yes, sir. Well, another thing that you can do in challenging people is just asking a simple question. What if you're wrong?
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is because what you're doing is you're challenging them on what is the basis for their truth and their belief and so on. Mm-hmm. Well, it's based on my feelings and what I want, what I like, and all of those kinds of things. Okay, but what if you're wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you have something that is, there's a tremendous amount of evidence, though there's faith required to believe it, but it's not blind faith. There's a lot of evidence that shows, you know, hey, okay, if I'm wrong, okay, we haven't lost anything.
Mm-hmm.
There is no God. There is no hell.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, we just die and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're wrong, and there is a God, and there is heaven, there is a hell, and there are rules that we're supposed to follow and so forth, then what happens to you?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's an important question to challenge people with and get them to think about. What if you're wrong? You know, you're so adamant about this belief, but what's it based on? Based on your thoughts and your feelings alone, what if you're wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they can answer one of two ways. I could be, or, nah, I'm never wrong.
That's right. But are there any things that we can learn from that perspective? First of all, as we talked about with the Dale Carnegie course, admit when people have a point. And there are some points that can be made. We've all got our limitations. We've all got biases and perspectives. And we need to admit them. Whenever we have those, we've got to realize that it is true that people who are politically powerful can impose their truth on everybody else. That is valid, and it has happened in the past. And so that is true. You know, there can be such a thing as an insider or an outsider. It even happened in the Roman Empire. Whenever Constantine declared Christianity is now the religion of the empire, all of a sudden, okay, everybody looked at it as like, guess I better be a Christian or else I'm going to be on the outside, which was probably one of the worst things that ever happened to the church, because everybody was joining for the wrong reasons, because they wanted to be on the inside. And that kind of led to some of the apostasy, because people were like, all right, if I'm going to be on the inside, we're going to have to do some things a little different. We need to set this up the way that we think should be correct. If we're going to have to do this, then let's do it right. So let's build this power system. You know, somebody's got to be in charge. You know, God, I can't see him. He can't tell us anything now. So we're going to put a person in charge. And we're going to set this up like any other organization. And, you know, there's going to be a head guy, and there's going to be people that respond to them. And, you know, that's how you get a lot of the wrong thinking in there. But the people in power imposed that on the rest of the world. So it really comes down to one question. Is there an authoritative viewpoint when it comes to spirituality? And that's the real question. Is it possible that God has spoken one time for the generations? Of course, we believe that. So, How do we convince other people that that is true? That God has spoken and that he's given us the truth and that there is only one truth? It's like the world being round. It doesn't matter what we believe if there is only one truth.
Well, you're going to have to remember, too, that there are still some people who are not going to believe it no matter what, because there's still a flat earth society today.
Yeah.
There are people that have a... Yep. We saw the documentary on it, you and I did.
Yeah.
That firmly believe that the earth is flat.
Yeah. And there's probably another group that says they believe it just to get attention, just to become famous and go on talk shows and stuff. But there is a small core group that I think does legitimately still believe that in spite of all of the evidence that you can show them. So there are going to be some things. So is there a role for feelings when it comes to this? So, you know, we need to look at truth. Is there a role for feelings? Is there such a thing as let your conscience be your guide? Jiminy Cricket says. And if you have a well-educated conscience, that can be helpful. Sometimes, deep down, your mind is telling you, this is wrong. I know this is wrong. You know, it may be something I want to do, but I really deep down realize that this is wrong. And there are a few things that are just innate to almost every society on earth where, you know, they almost all acknowledge murder is wrong. Rape is wrong. Child abuse is wrong. And that's something that pretty much all societies tend to agree on. So you know, there is a role for that of listening whenever something deep down is saying what you're about to do is wrong. Then you do need to listen to that feeling. But Christianity is more than just your conscience. I mean, there is a set of rules and doctrine, but it's really based on a relationship with Jesus. It's not about rules and doctrine. Those are there, but they naturally just follow from the relationship. If we don't have the relationship, then we don't have Christianity. Matthew 22:36-40. Jesus was asked, "Teacher, what's the greatest commandment in the law?" Jesus replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments." So, and if we love God, and if we do have that relationship, we're going to want to do what he says. We're not going to feel rebellious and say, "I know you told me this, but I'm just not going to do it." In John 14, we read, Jesus said, "I'm the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." And then a few verses later, he says, if you love me, keep my commandments." So, if you want to have that relationship, it has to be based on obedience. That's the only option that you have. You can be a Christian, or you can choose not to be a Christian, but cherry-picking a few things you like out of Christianity doesn't help you. That doesn't make you a Christian. That's the problem we get when we try to legislate Christianity and make it the law of the land. Okay, you know, that's fine in some cases, and there's some overlap, but there's some differences. You can legislate everything in there, but if people aren't doing it based on that relationship, you still haven't saved them. And so that relationship is what it's based on, and if you don't have that, it doesn't matter if you do everything the Bible says. If you're not doing it because of that loving relationship that you've got with Jesus, then you've missed the boat. And so, and a lot of people don't realize that when you're talking to them, that it's not about, okay, well, the rule says this, and I don't like that rule. That's not where you start when it comes to Christianity. You don't start with saying, now, if you're going to be a Christian, you can't do this, and you can't do this, and you can't do this, but you have to do this, and this, and this, and we better see you here every Sunday. Don't forget your food for the potluck. Because that's not what Christianity is about. And if we're starting off trying to teach people that way, they're missing the boat. They're missing why you want to be a Christian. Is because of that love and that relationship that you have with an all-powerful Creator. And that's the draw. It's not the, okay, you got to follow these rules. Yes.
Dale, the thing that's happening today more and more is that you have people that are saying, yes, I agree with that, and I want to have a relationship with God. I just don't need to be part of organized religion to do that. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's another, okay, I can have that relationship with Him, but I don't need the church. So then you have another problem that you have to discuss in terms of what is the church.
Right.
And help them to see that. Okay, but part of the fact of the relationship with God is that He wants you to be, and you are, if you're a true Christian, you're a part of His church. Mm-hmm. And you can't just neglect that.
Right. And I know your response. Our church is the most disorganized place there is, so you don't have a problem there.
I have a problem with disorganization.
And sometimes our response is, yeah, I've got a problem with organized religion too. Because the problem is the organization comes from man so many times. That's not what Christianity is about. It's, in one sense, it's not an organized religion. In that man didn't organize it. Christ did. And He made it very simple. And once again, you're back to that relationship with Him. And it's not a matter of saying, okay, I want to be a Christian, but I don't want to come to church and do those churchy kind of things. It's based on that relationship, and the coming to church is what, it flows naturally from that. If you don't want to come to church, you probably really don't want to be a Christian. That's probably what it comes down to. And once you are a Christian, then you feel that need to come and connect to other people that can help you in that journey. If you truly love God and you want to serve God, then you recognize the value in that, and it's not a burden anymore.
Definitely. I got that argument before at the theater one time because you and I showed up and we were still in our clothes for church, and I know you know what I'm talking about. Said, well, I don't believe in a church where God keeps attendance as a mediator, and where you got to get dressed as a mediator. I don't believe in any of those things. The reason why I'm dressed, I think, is I just wanted to look nice when I went to church, you know, and what. But, if, you know, coming however you are, and I don't believe when you get up to the pearly gates that there's anybody sitting there with one of those little attendance books that our Sunday school teachers have to see who was there and says, oh, well, you checked all these marks, but you did this or you didn't
right.
do this. And,
yeah.
And usually the most of their arguments like that, I can say, I don't believe that either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you missed April 14th, 1981, going to church when you could have been there. You know, that it's not about the legalism there. Like I said, God knows your heart, and that's what it's based on. And, you know, as far as his rules and everything, we follow those because we want to. We do those things because we want to.
And we're going to mess up.
And we're going to make mistakes. And God knows we're going to make mistakes, and He's going to make some allowances for that because He designed us and He built us and He knows we're imperfect.
What about bringing in scripture where
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But they need to understand that you come to worship because there's a benefit for it. You don't do it grudgingly because you're commanded to. I mean, we can beat them over the head with Hebrews 10:25, there it is. It was there and then it just left my head. You know, don't forsake the assembly. But if people are coming here because it's like, gotta go. Paul wrote about that in Hebrews. And so I have to do it even though I hate it. You know, if that's our attitude, then there's a deeper problem than not coming to church. So that's the idea, is if you don't want to come to church, then maybe you need to start peeling back that onion and see why is it that I don't want to be here. And, because it shouldn't be a burden. So, does this mean that every other religion teaches everything wrong? Is that the idea? You know, there's some truth in almost everything. In the Dale Carnegie class, we talked about finding your common grounds that you have with people. Almost no matter what they believe, they're going to believe some things that are right. And almost every other religion teaches some things that are good concepts, and that apply. Whether it's Islam or Judaism or Buddhism, there's going to be some things that are true and that are good doctrinal things. And you can start there and talking to them about it. But that doesn't mean that that's a good path to take for salvation. We can't say because you teach some things that are true that means that this is something that it's perfectly legitimate for people to follow. Because there's also some very basic disagreements between different religions. And they can't all be true, because sometimes they're directly contradictory to one another. So whenever that's the case, you have to examine the evidence, which is what we've been doing in this whole class, is looking about what can we believe and why can we believe it. Is there evidence that Jesus really did get resurrected from the dead? Because that's really what it's all about. If Jesus was resurrected from the dead, there is only one explanation for that. And that is that happened as a result of God raising him from the dead, which means God exists. It means that Jesus was his son, that he was the Messiah, and that we better listen, because he's given us very clear instructions. And we talked about the historical, the written evidence for that, the fact that really is. There really can only be one truth as you look at that. We talked about the evidence that Jesus is the Messiah, that he is literally the only person in history that fulfilled those requirements and the only one that can, because of the restrictions that were placed in prophecy about that. And so with that evidence, we can't ignore that. Just like the evidence about the shape of the earth, you have to follow the evidence or else you're just rationalizing why you believe what it is, and you're doing that in spite of the evidence. So shouldn't we be tolerant of the beliefs of others?
Define what you mean by that.
It all comes down to the meaning of the word tolerance there. Tolerance means accepting each other even though they believe something different than we do. It doesn't mean accepting that their beliefs are true. We can be tolerant of others. We can be accepting of others, realizing that they believe some things that aren't true. That doesn't mean that we tell them, it's perfectly okay for you to believe those things, and I think that you'll be saved. If we know that's not the case. That's not tolerance. Tolerance is saying, I'm still going to treat you like you're a child of God because you are. But let's talk about some things and let me explain why I believe the way that I do. And you talk about the way that, you know, the reasons you have for believing what you do, because this is an important conversation to have. And if we believe contradictory things, then one of us is wrong. And we need to have a discussion so that we can see what the evidence suggests. That's tolerance. It's not accepting people and accepting that their beliefs are true and are valid.
And that's true. Today, things are changing in the word tolerance. Mm-hmm. The tolerance of today's age is you're supposed to accept them and believe what they believe. Mm-hmm. If you don't, then you're not being tolerant. And they need to realize we're going to love everybody because God loves everybody. Mm-hmm. We're not going to accept their beliefs.
We've lost in our society often the ability to respectfully disagree and to have a civil discussion and a polite discussion with somebody where we treat them in the way that we want to be treated. That we respect the fact that they came to their beliefs in a certain way, but that we can discuss them rationally and without being offended by one another and without condemning one another and saying what you believe is wrong and you are bound for hell, you demon. That's not going to convert anybody. We have to be respectful and tolerant. But also, we need to still have the discussion and educate. Yeah.
And I also expect to tell you, we've got to call sin, sin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a time for us to stand and acknowledge the fact that we're going down the wrong path. Not because of Charlie, but because of what the scriptures say.
Mm-hmm.
And that things help direct a lot of the circumstances is that we, first of all, have to come to the agreement that the Bible is the authority. Mm-hmm. And no, we're not going to get there with everything. But the scriptures also say that the seed was cast and some fell on thorny ground. And all the scriptures say, I don't live peacefully with everyone that you can. But again, sometimes you've got to just
shake the dust off your feet.
Shake the dust, and it is what it is. Because there are some people who either the evil has got a hold of them, or their soul is so calloused that there is no effort on their part to find a way to get it.
But you can't never give up hope on that, because we had a woman come into our Bible study in Ukraine who had actually worked for the Communist Party and had actually persecuted Christians in her job there. That her job was to squelch any church movement or whatever was going on there. And she came in and studied with us. So what best for you, just turn to prayer and you let that seed do whatever it's going to do with that person. But, and I agree with what you're saying on this about how we need to learn to agree to disagree, because having grown up in a very legalistic type of religion as a kid, there were times when things were taken that were not pertinent to our salvation, and sometimes taken with maybe some obscure verse from the Old Testament and said, that's a sin. And don't you think that turned off a lot of people when they would hear this sort of thing? That something that maybe was just a little different, maybe didn't look exactly like a fundamentalist Baptist would do, was suddenly a sin, and therefore I can't be there now because I've done this in my life. Sometimes it wasn't even something they were participating in. So we have to make sure those things that we do call sin are things that are actually called sin, and not just things that look different to us and we think they're not right.
And in medical terms, it's triage. First of all, saying, okay, this person is beyond saving, but this person I can save. You know, it's being able to recognize, okay, I'm wasting my time trying to deal with this person whenever I could be spending that same time with this person or these people that are a little bit more open. And so, and it's also when you have an individual looking at them, and it's like if they've got blood spurting from an artery and they also have ingrown toenails, we're not going to worry about the ingrown toenails right now. So when you study with somebody, you need to focus on that relationship with Jesus. You don't start with the fact of they don't take communion every week. You start with the fact of their core beliefs about Jesus. You can work your way to peripheral matters later on, but you want to start with the fact that they're accepting that Jesus is their Savior, and they're accepting that the words of the Bible are authoritative. Once you get to that point, then you can start to branch out and broaden your study a little bit. But you don't start on those minor points of disagreement that you may have as you're studying. Thoughts or comments? Yeah, because it's hard to teach people when you have no relationship with them. So if I were to talk to your friends, they might just dismiss me right away. But because they have a relationship with you, they might be more open to a discussion with you than with me. And sometimes we got to realize, okay, of all the people I know, I'm the one that has the best possibility of talking to this person and recognizing. And that's part of what we're going to be doing in this coming year with Here Am I, Send Me, is to be open to the idea of not everything has to be funneled off to somebody else. We've spent this past year talking about the CERT program and trying to equip you to be able to go out and take the gospel, because there are going to be times when you're the person that's in the best position or the only person in the position to help this person. If I come up on a car wreck beside the road and somebody's spurting blood, I'm not a medical professional, but I'm the one that's there. And I'm the only one that's there, and I'm the only hope they've got. So I better do what I can while I'm there. And it's the same way spiritually. Sometimes you're the one that's there. And it doesn't matter if Russ is better equipped to deal with this person than you. You're the one that's there. You're the one that has to apply the initial first aid, at least, and get them stable so that then we can continue their spiritual treatment. So is it arrogant to say that Christianity is the only path to God and to salvation?
Well, if I didn't believe it, I wouldn't be here.
People talk about Christianity being an exclusive religion. Almost every religion is an exclusive religion. If you didn't believe that this was true, you wouldn't be a member of that group. And their truth that they teach is different than what the others teach, and they can't both be true. So obviously, if you didn't believe what your religion teaches, then what's the point? If they're not teaching truth, then what's the point? So why are you a member of that religion if you don't think it's right? So everybody thinks their religion is right. So why should Christianity be any different? Of course we believe that it's exclusive. Of course we believe it's the truth, as does every other religion. So it's just a matter of teaching and of providing the evidence as to why we think it's true. Okay? You know, a lot of the problems that we have in the world today are because of the nature of sin and how it's viewed. A lot of people don't like the word sin. They don't like to be told that something is wrong. And so it's hard to ask for forgiveness if you haven't yet acknowledged your guilt. And so that's, a lot of times people like to be told it's not your fault. And when it comes right down to it, that's what we have to understand, is that it is our fault. It doesn't mean that we're self-righteous. You're sinful and it's your fault. We're sinful. It's our fault. I'm not better than you because I'm a Christian. I'm the same as you, and I have the same needs you do. And I still have those same needs. And so let's talk about it. I was making mistakes. I still make mistakes. And so are you. So let's acknowledge them. And once we acknowledge the fact that we make mistakes, we're also acknowledging that we need the help of somebody that can cleanse us from those situations, from those sins.
Dale, that's what makes Christianity exclusive. We're the only ones who have a God who died for us because of our sins.
Exactly right.
And that's part of it, is recognizing and acknowledging that I need that God, I need that relationship with Him because of my sins. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, we are exclusive.
We have to recognize there's a penalty when you make a mistake. You know, if you damage somebody's property, you have to pay for it. If you're a child and you break the neighbor's window and you don't have any money, then somebody else has to pay for it. They either have to pay for it themselves, your parent has to pay for it, but the penalty has to be paid when you make a mistake. And in this case, just like the little child, we're not capable of paying the penalty for our mistakes. So our Father has to do it for us. The good news is He did. That's the real message of Christianity, is that somebody has paid your debt, and now then you owe them obedience and worship because of it. So no matter what people choose to believe, there is only one truth. And God has provided the evidence. He's given historical evidence, archaeological evidence, documentary evidence. He's providing everything that we need to support the truth. And that's what we've talked about during this whole past year, is how you can know the truth. And if you need notes from any of the classes that you've had, that you say, okay, I remember we taught a class on this, but I don't remember the details. But I've got somebody I need to study with that fits this category. Ask us. You know, we'll refresh you. We'll provide you with the notes that you may need to help them. But don't just let them bleed out. You need to take care of them. We need to make sure everybody realizes that God alone has the power of salvation, and that He's accomplished that through Jesus and through nobody else. Because salvation is found in no one else. There's no other name under heaven given to mankind by which we must be saved. That's the point you need to get across.